For those of you who don't know me, my name is Peter Unger, and I'm the youth director here at The Story, and I'm so excited to be here this morning. I would ask for just your patience with me and your grace. I am not usually up here, and it's been a wild week, and a lot of people are really, really sick, but I'm excited to be able to share with you today. And so I want to talk with you actually about something that I haven't had a lot of in the last year, but the moments that I have had it, it's completely transformed my life. And what that is that's peace. So today we're going to talk about the missing piece, and specifically how when we lack peace, it seems that our lives fall to pieces. I, in many points of my life, have struggled with anxiety and with depression and just not knowing who I was, and I still do at certain points. But what I can say is that it's different now that I have God than it was before when I didn't have God. And it's crazy to realize that for some of us, it was maybe 1 or 2 or 5 years. For others of us, maybe it was 40 or 50. But for me, it was 19 years of my life specifically that I was trying to figure out all on my own accord. And now that I have the comparison of crossing that line of faith and going through life with God, it truly feels like I wasn't living at all before. And to see what he's done and how he's transformed my life has changed absolutely everything in the last 2.5 years. And peace is specifically something that I lack, that I've seen become something I'm so full of in certain moments, especially when I give everything up to God. And so today specifically, I wanted to talk about the peace that God brings, not the peace the world brings, not the peace that we're going to have from meditation, not the peace that we're going to have from just taking, you know, medication or from sleeping, but the peace that God brings us that makes sense, that doesn't make sense when we're lacking peace internally and yet God's giving it to us, when everything around us is falling to pieces and yet we still feel a calmness in our souls. It seems that no matter how much peace is going on around you, sometimes the most elusive thing to find is to find peace within you. And so we're going to look at Isaiah chapter 9. If you guys have a Bible with you today, we're going to look at something that we talk about a lot during this Christmas season. And it's a place in Isaiah. And I think if we look at this language and we don't really break down what it means, we can completely lose sight of what God's trying to share with us through the scripture because it's so beautiful and it's so eloquent that we might completely miss the point of it. I meet people every single day that are struggling with anxiety or stress or just feel like there's an overwhelming sense that life is out of control. And it's something that comes and it goes, and sometimes when life seems to be flowing the way you want it to, you have more peace, but the second that something goes wrong, you lose that peace and you lose that inner sense of well-being. And Isaiah, centuries and centuries before Jesus would ever come, he prophesied of his birth, and we have this promise of peace that's given to us in Isaiah chapter 9. And like I said, we talk about it every single Christmas season, and we're kind of stepping out of that Christmas season, but there's a specific name that he gives God in this that I think can really affect and change our hearts today. It says in Isaiah chapter 9, verses 6, it says, "For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the greatness of his government and peace, there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on and forever. The zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this." He gives him these four titles, this promise of who God is going to be through Jesus and what he's going to do for us. He calls him Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Prince of Peace. And for the sake of today, that's what we're going to focus on is Prince of Peace, because that's who Jesus came to be for us. It says, "Of the greatness of his government and peace, there will be no end." And a lot of times when we read this, the question then becomes, if there's not going to be an end to his peace and there's not going to be an end to his government, when's it even going to start? Because it doesn't seem like we have peace in this world. And if God meant to establish his throne through government, why is it that we see so much corruption in the government? Why is it that our nation struggles in so many ways and our leadership doesn't seem to know where they're taking us sometimes, but we don't also feel like, we feel like we could step up and sometimes do a better job when maybe that's not a reality. Maybe they're doing the best with what they have, but we struggle with the people that are in leadership that are controlling the ebb and the flow of the way that our society moves. And it's, and something interesting is that it's promised here that on the greatness of his government and peace, there will be no end. You see, the government that Jesus came to establish was not through any men or women in Washington, D.C. It's not through any certain throne. It's not through any certain empire. The government of peace that Jesus meant to establish was in the human spirit, was in us, that through his people, he wants to establish peace in our hearts so we can be the peace that the world needs in a world that's struggling with anxiety. You see, peace is the opposite of noise in the dictionary. And we don't have peace because there's so much noise in the world, because the world is so loud. We see a continual rise in anxiety and stress in the population. And so much of it comes down to that we have so many voices telling us what to do and who to be. And there's so much noise through social media, and there's so much noise through the media that we struggle to even have moments of silence except for when we're actually asleep. We have this phrase, rest in peace, because we just hope that maybe for the first time some people will gain peace, but that it's not going to come from being here. It's going to come after they've actually passed away. And so we say rest in peace because it's something that we feel like we lack when we're actually awake and when we're actually alive. On his government, there will be greatness on his government and peace. There will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time forever on. The zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this. And I think it's easy to read something like this and to think, well, they don't know what the world that we're living in was like. They weren't around the constant war and the violence and the suffering that we saw. This was a different time in history. Maybe this applied to them back then, but how does this apply to us today? Because they knew nothing of the violence that we know. All they had to deal with was oppression from the Egyptian culture, a nation living inside another nation. You know, knowing that you have a million plus people living inside your nation and you feel like you're going to lose control of them, it makes sense that there would be slavery, that there would be oppression in that time. All they knew was suffering from the Babylonians. All they knew was exile. All they knew was suffering from the Roman Empire. All they knew was a world where a nation came in and had so much control over their lives that the common citizen had no voice. The common citizen had no peace. All they knew was constant war and constant violence, no different than our world today. They lived in a world where their leader thought that he was a god. It's hard for us to imagine a world like that. See, this is the world that they lived in at this time. And they needed peace just as much as we need peace today. They had just as much violence and war going on. They had oppression from every other nation you could imagine at so many points in Israel's history. And this is why peace was so important to them and why it's also important to us today. You see, peace in the Old Testament is this word shalom, and peace was a greeting. It's something you'd say in passing. It's something that you say when you enter someone's home. You'd speak shalom over their home. You'd speak peace over their home. In the New Testament, it's this Greek word called eirene, and it means peace. You see, peace back then was more than just a greeting. Peace actually was this idea of interconnectivity, this idea of connection. The image given in the original translation of the word shalom is such as a wall that's being built up, a wall that has no holes in it. And when you lack shalom, when you lack peace, there's holes in that wall and it's easy for it to be broken apart. Peace is so much more than just a word that we use today. It's so much more than just a sign that we put up. Peace was so much more than just the lack of war and violence. Peace was an internal structure, an internal place that your heart was actually at. Peace was this idea of interconnectivity, that when you had peace, you were whole. That when you had peace, you were connected to the people around you. That was the idea of peace. That's the idea of this word shalom that's talked about in Isaiah. So we have this promise of peace, this mighty counselor, this mighty God, this everlasting Father, this Prince of Peace who's going to come. And it's so beautiful because in Luke chapter 1, you have Zechariah, his son is going to be John the Baptist. And John the Baptist is supposed to come and prepare the way for Jesus. And he sings this blessing, this prayer over John's life before he's ever born. He says, "You, my child, will be called a prophet of the Most High. You will go on before the Lord to prepare the way for him, to give his people the knowledge of salvation through the forgiveness of their sins because of the tender mercy of our God, by which the rising sun will come to us from heaven to shine on those living in darkness and in the shadow of death, to guide our feet into the path of peace." You see, John was meant to come and prepare the way for Jesus. And in preparing the way for Jesus, he was gonna help people to be ready to have their lives be brought out of darkness. I love this idea of the rising sun is gonna come to us from heaven. He's gonna shine on those that are living in darkness and in the shadow of death. He's gonna guide our feet into the path of peace. And what's talked about here is the shadow of death. You see, the shadow of something has so much less power than the actual reality of it, that he's gonna take us out of the shadow of death and he's gonna guide our feet into the path of peace. That the world has this wide, crazy road that we have to travel, but peace is this narrow road that Jesus is gonna lead us down, that's gonna give us clarity, that's gonna give us presence with the people we're around, that's going to allow us to be who we were supposed to be, who we were always meant to be. You see, so many things steal our peace. And sometimes it can be as simple as a conversation with someone. It can be a deadline that you have to fulfill. It can be a relationship that ends. It could be a death in the family. There's so many things that steal our peace. And it's crazy that in a matter of a moment, all of your peace can be taken away by something going wrong in your life. But what's so incredible, when the scriptures are trying to teach us in so many ways, is that everything that steals our peace is powerless in the presence of Jesus and the peace that he brings to give us inside of our souls. That's what Jesus meant to give us. On the next chapter of Luke, there's this great singing, this great joy from the angels. It's that typical story we know of the angels, and they're coming and they're declaring Jesus' birth. And this is what they say, and this is why this is so cool for us. They say, "Suddenly a great company of heavenly hosts appeared with the angel, praising God and saying, 'Glory to God in the highest heaven and on earth, peace on those to whom his favor rests.'" And when I read this, I don't have the knowledge of what the highest heaven specifically is, but what I know is that the highest heaven is the heaven furthest away from you and me. The highest heaven is the place furthest away from you and me. And it says that there will be glory to God in the highest heaven and on earth, peace on those on whom his favor rests. That God is going to be glorified when there's peace on earth, when there's peace in us, that's when God is going to be glorified. The God in the highest heaven is going to be glorified when there's peace on earth and there's peace inside of us. And I just wonder, like, why would peace matter to a God that's in the highest heaven? Why would our peace be what brings God glory, a God who's in the highest heaven? What have we actually done to deserve peace? It seems that we can create the most advanced technology that works so fast that is able to connect us with people all around the world, that we have access to quick information, that we have cars that are now driving themselves, and yet we can't actually solve any issues of human poverty. That we can get to space, that we can go out into space and we can actually see more of the cosmos, more of the galaxies, and yet we can't even fix anxiety in our own culture. We can do some of the greatest things, some of the most innovative things, when this world is moving so fast, that seems to be so advanced, a world that people dreamed of 100 years ago, and yet now that we live here, we have more problems, we're more stressed and depressed and anxious than we've ever been before as a generation, as a culture, as a civilization. Why is that if we have so many answers to all of these other things, but we can't actually fix what's going on inside of us? It's because we only fix the things that we want to fix, and we only actually try to innovate the things that we want to innovate, and we try to kind of distract from everything else that's going wrong in our lives, and we do that through, you know, watching the world advance in some ways as it falls behind inside of us. So why would it matter to the God in the highest heaven if there's peace inside of us? Like, haven't we given God enough evidence that we don't actually deserve peace? We've given God so much evidence that we don't deserve peace, and yet he's gonna be glorified when there's peace on earth and when there's peace inside of us. That's what's so amazing about the scriptures, is that God loved us enough to give us Jesus and to bring us peace. And that's when God would be glorified, is when you and me have peace inside of us, the peace that Jesus came to give. And by the way, if you want to know if the favor of God rests on you, it says, "Peace on those to whom his favor rests." If you want to know if the favor of God rests on you, you can know this by the peace that's rested inside of you. That in the midst of everything that's going wrong in your life, you still have a calmness. The scriptures tell us that he gives us a peace that passes all understanding. It transcends all understanding, that we can have peace even when everything else is going wrong in our lives, that this is the peace that God came to give us. What's cool is as we move into the New Testament, we're given more information as to how Jesus is going to be the provider of peace. You see, in his life, in John chapter 14, he says this to a group of people he's speaking with. He says, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you." And you ever use this? Have you ever used the same language for something, but you meant something completely different? You talk to someone and you were like, "Let's go get good coffee." And then they recommend a place and you're like, "That is not what I was thinking." Or you're like, "Let's go see a good movie." And then they end up wanting to go to a movie that you don't want to see at all. You ever say the same thing, but you mean something completely different? I remember this is how it was growing up during Christmas time, is that I would ask for cool clothes from mom and dad, and then my mom would go to Kohl's and she would get, you know, the Tony Hawk brand, and she'd get me these like boot cut jeans, and she'd get me these really boxy like DC shoes. And I just had a different clothing style back then. If you wear that stuff, that's awesome. But for me at that age, it was not my style. And this is the stuff that she was getting for me. So cool clothes to me meant something different than it did to my parents. And so it's crazy how you can say the same thing, but you can mean something different. So when we hear this, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you," it's easy to think, Jesus is coming to give peace, but how is his peace any different than the world, than the peace that we already have in the world? He says, "I do not give to you as the world gives." And then he says something that sounds so simple, and yet it's so profound when we actually get it. He says, "Don't let your hearts be troubled, and do not be afraid." And I think if we just take these two things and we conquered them, we would have the peace that we long for. We would have the peace that our souls long for. He says, "Don't let your hearts be troubled, and do not be afraid." You say, see, Jesus said this because he knew that this is something that we're going to struggle with, that our hearts were going to be troubled, that we were going to be afraid, that we were going to lack peace, and that we were going to need the peace that he came to give to us. Most of our peace is going to be stolen by worry. It's going to be stolen by fear, and Jesus knew that, and that's why he said, "Don't let your hearts be troubled, and don't be afraid. I'm going to give you peace that the world doesn't give to you, and that peace is going to allow you to not have a heart that's constantly troubled and a heart that won't be afraid." And yet that's something we completely struggle with. We always struggle with is our hearts are always troubled and we seem to always be afraid of something. So everyone's afraid of something. And a lot of times we're afraid of something that could happen to us, but something that God would never let happen to us. We're afraid of things that have never happened, but we worry they might happen. We're afraid of a car accident that we might get in. We're afraid of a job that we might lose. We're afraid that the world's gonna end. Some people are sitting around and they're afraid they're gonna lose their girlfriend. They don't even have a girlfriend. Like, we're afraid of things that we shouldn't be afraid of, and we constantly let worry guide our lives. But worry is like a rocking chair. It gives you something to do, but it gets you absolutely nowhere. And it's something that we sit around and we spend so much of our lives worrying about things instead of actually trusting God with that or giving it over to him so that he can take away our worry. The reason why we get worried, the reason why we get anxious inside is because we have an overwhelming sense that life is out of control and like the outcome is not gonna be perfect, that the outcome isn't gonna be better. You feel anxiety when you don't feel like tomorrow could be better than today. When you feel like all you need to do is go to sleep and reset and wake up and try to get through it and to move through all of the despair that you feel. We get anxiety, we get stressed, we get worried when we feel like life's out of control, when we feel like we don't have control of what's gonna happen next. That's when we really start to worry. And some of us have built our lives on worry so much that optimism actually scares us. That when you meet someone who's positive, you can't imagine the world that they're talking about. You couldn't possibly live in that world because you're so stressed and they seem so vaguely positive that you feel like it's ingenuine. You feel like it's not real. You feel like they're putting up a front. That's why for some people, people like me are your worst nightmares. Because I truly am. I'm so optimistic about the world and about life. And I don't think that's something that's idealistic. You see, I think when you walk with the God of hope, you can start to see what the world could be and not what the world is right now. You start to see things through God's eyes. And God definitely does not have a plan for this world to progressively get worse. We're the ones that have made the decisions to make it that way and to live in that and to be a part of creating more brokenness and suffering in the world. In God's reality, in God's heart, this world was never meant to be the way that it is right now. So he's here picking up the pieces because we've fallen to pieces because we're lacking peace. Some of us are so afraid of things that could happen, but they would never happen. And Jesus understood this when he said, don't let your hearts troubled and don't be afraid. He knew that our hearts were going to be troubled, and he knew that we were going to feel like everything around us was in trouble when everything inside of us is in trouble. It seems like when we are struggling internally, everything around us feels like it's falling apart. Even if it's not, that's the reality that we live in. And some of us have stepped into a space that's simply too heavy for us to carry. It's a weight that only God can carry, and we're trying to do it all on our own accord. We're trying to figure it all out on our own. And because of that, because it's a weight that's too heavy for us, it's something that seems to crush us. The weight of some of our circumstances, the weight of the things that we're going through, the weight of our emotions are crushing us, and the weight of that is leaving us in a place where we're suffocating. And it's because we're not letting God take control of that. It's not something that he forces on us. It's so cool that he is that way with us, that we can choose to try to do everything on our own power, and it's only when we're too weak to stand sometimes that we'll actually give it up to him, and he still takes it willingly each time. He doesn't force us to do anything because we have free will. Some of us need to give him our worry. We need to give him our doubt. We need to give him our circumstances so that we can have more trust. We're afraid, we're filled with fear, and some of us don't know the difference between worry and fear because they travel together. Worry has this companion called fear, and they travel in a pack together, and we just need to fail more. Some of us just need to fail more in life. I have so many times, even this morning, where I'm so uncomfortable because growth's about to happen. I'm so uncomfortable because I'm about to do something that I don't feel comfortable doing, and sometimes we have a choice. Sometimes we have a choice to step into something that's scary that we've never done. We have a choice to step into the unknown. We don't feel like we will come out on the other side, but that's where we have to have faith and we have to trust God. It's like diving off of a diving board with no water in sight, and 2 feet before you hit the ground, a pool of water appears. Sometimes that's what it's like. And if we would just not be so afraid of failing and we failed more, we would see that we were going to come out on the other end. We're too afraid to even cross over to the other side. And so we stay where we're at. This is what it was like for me growing up playing football. You see, I got more injured when I was afraid of getting hit than when I wasn't afraid of getting hit. And that's how it is with most things in life, is when you're afraid of getting hit, it usually hurts you more. And so I remember having a turning point where it's like, I don't want to feel this kind of pain anymore. I'm going to try to hit first. I'm going to try to hit harder. And when I did that, I didn't feel the pain that I felt before. It wasn't as bad because I was more focused on hitting than I was on getting hit in that sense. And that's not something you should take to every area of your life, but if you're on a football field and you need a way to take your stress out on people or your anger, it's a good place to do that. It's not an everyday solution to everything else going on in your life. But it's crazy that most of the times when we're more afraid of getting hit, right, metaphorically, that's when it hurts the most, and that's when we usually get hit the hardest. So some of us simply just need to fail more because we're afraid of nothing, and the people that are doing something are the ones that are actually afraid of something. And it's just a shift that we need to make. Jesus goes on to say in John chapter 16, he says, I've told you these things so that in me you may have peace. And this is a critical transition because belief isn't enough. See, the peace that Jesus came to give us only comes when we do what he says here. He says, I told you these things so that in me you may have peace. The peace of Jesus only comes when you live in him and he actually lives in you. He says, but take heart, I have overcome the world. He says, in this world you're going to have trouble. And it's so simple to read that and to be like, in this world we're going to have trouble. That's such an obvious thing. It seems like something that Jesus didn't need to say. And yet, he says, in this world, you're going to have trouble. A lot of times, we're going to be the reason for that trouble. We're going to be the reason that there is trouble. And he says, in this world, you will have trouble. But take heart, I have overcome the world. And this is an interesting thing, because when we read this, we don't want to take responsibility for it. I don't want to take responsibility for this a lot of times when I read it. You read this, and you're so excited, and you say, in this world, you'll have trouble. But take heart, I've overcome the world. And like, yes, God has overcome the world. He has overcome the world. And we tend to take that statement and we throw that across the room. We throw that to another state. We throw that to another country. And we're like, God has overcome the world, right? God has overcome the world. And then someone over there is reading this and they're saying, oh, thank goodness that God has overcome the world. And they're throwing it back to us. We're not taking responsibility, realizing that we are the world. That when God says he has overcome the world, it means that he's overcome us. It means that Jesus has overcome the world inside of us. See, if we want to see the change that God intends for the world, if we want him to overcome the world, then we need to realize that Jesus can only change the world if he starts with changing the one that's inside of us. That he has to transform the world inside us before he can transform the world around us. And yet so many times we're throwing this across the room, we're throwing this to someone else saying, God has overcome the world. He's overcome all of those people. He's overcome everything outside of this church. When in reality, the world is us. The world inside of you is what he's overcome. He's overcome our sin nature. He's overcome our flesh. He's overcome us. And when we take responsibility for this, God can take over. God can move in and God can do something absolutely amazing. We want him to end the wars. We want him to end the violence that we see going on in the world. And we don't understand that the war that is going to end all wars is the war that's going on inside of the human heart. That when God ends the war that's going on inside of us, the internal battle and struggle that we're having, that's when the world's at peace. That's when the world is the way that God designed it to be, is when he fixes everything inside of us. When we internally are the people that we need to be, that's when the world's going to be better. It's interesting because Jesus' entire life was focused on bringing us peace. It was focused on giving us peace. His entire life was focused on creating a calmness in the midst of our storm, like we were singing earlier this morning. And it's ironic, isn't it, that peace came and we killed him? That peace came and we killed him with our war and our violence, with the kind of people that we are, with the inhumaneness that we possess, that we actually came and we killed peace. And I don't know about you, but I would say that one of the biggest differences between me and God, between you and God, is that if you came to give people peace, if you came to fix people's lives, and in turn they decided to kill you for it, if you had an opportunity to come back 3 days later like Jesus does, if you had the opportunity to be resurrected, you probably wouldn't come back representing peace anymore. You'd probably be pretty mad because you picked up 12 guys along the way. Jesus had 12 disciples and you poured your life into them. And then at the moment where you were about to be crucified, only one of them was present and the other 11 had ran and had hid. I don't think you would come back and want to bring more peace. I think you'd want to bring some wrath at that point. That's one of the biggest differences between us and God, is that Jesus didn't just come to be peace. His response to what happened to him is the proof that he was the peace that he talked about. Because when he was crucified 3 days later, he rose again. And when he rose again, this is what he did. John chapter 20 tells us this: on the evening of that first day of the week, which was Sunday, because Monday isn't the first day of the week. Today is the first day of the week. Sunday is the first day of the week. This is how we start our week. We start our week here, and then we go out into our workspace. Then we go out into our school. Then we go out into the rest of the world. He says, on the evening of that first day of the week, when the disciples were together with the doors locked for fear of the Jewish leaders, Jesus came and stood among them. I would do the same thing if I was Jesus. I would walk through walls, right? Don't need to use doors at this point. It's like he just came back from the dead. And I think that like what he says next, it's so funny, because if you ever want to be quotable, if you ever want to be profound, all you got to do is come back from the dead. And then at that point, anything you say, people are going to be listening. See, Jesus chose his words so carefully, though, because the first thing that he says when he came and stood among men that were afraid of these Jewish leaders and probably more afraid to see the guy that loved them more than anyone that they ran away from, the first thing that Jesus said to them is he says, peace be with you. Peace be with you. He speaks shalom over them. After he said this, he showed them his hands and his side, and the disciples were overjoyed when they saw the Lord. They were so happy to see Jesus and to see that he was alive. Ephesians 2, verse 14 says, for he himself is our peace. This is the peace that Jesus came to give us. It's a peace that can only come from him. When everything else is going wrong around us, there can be peace inside of us. And when everything else around us is at peace, we can have that internal peace that we're longing for. I still have days and I still have moments where I struggle with anxiety, where I struggle with having peace, where I feel like life is out of control. But the second that I turn my eyes to who God is and who he's made me to be, I can have peace, and you can too. And what's so cool about the power of peace is that peace brings us clarity. Peace allows us to have a clear mind. Peace allows us to think through our thoughts. Peace allows us to not say things that we're going to regret later on. Peace brings us presence. Peace allows us to be with the people that we're with in the moment that we're with them, not thinking about what we have to do next or our agenda for the day or what else is going on in our life. Peace brings us presence with the people that need us to be there for them. And peace brings love. Because when you're at peace, you're not busy struggling internally. You're not busy trying to figure yourself out, and you can actually give love back to other people. Jesus is the missing piece. See, the peace that Jesus came to give is going to change everything in us so it can change everything around us. Not something new outside coming in, but something new inside that's coming out. And the peace that he came to give us, the missing piece, is going to make him the Prince of Peace in our lives. It's going to help him to prepare the way for the path of peace in our lives. And it's going to be the peace that we need when everything else is going wrong inside of us. Jesus is the peace that we need, and Jesus comes to give us connection. He comes to give us wholeness, and that's what the Old Testament was talking about. That's what the New Testament was talking about with the word irene. That's what the Old Testament was talking about with the word shalom. It's an interconnectivity. It's a wholeness that he came to give us, and if it's something you lack, even with walking with God or not walking with God, if you don't know God today, then this is the start, is to know that walking with God means that you can have peace that you've never had before. But if you do and you still struggle with anxiety, or you still struggle with stress, or you simply just feel like life is out of control and it's a common theme in your life, this is something maybe that we need to look at in our own lives to give up to God, to give him control of, so that we can have the peace that he talks about. So as we step into this new year, 2019, this isn't a year that passes by and you look back and you realize that you were more worried about the things that you could have done than the things that you did do. But this is a year that we can step confidently into the future of who God's calling us to be and live the life that he always imagined for each one of us, which is so incredible. It's something that's meant to bless other people. It's something that's meant to heal their hearts. So that's what we can take away from today. We can look at a Christmas passage like this, something that we refer to every year at the end of the year, but we can start at the beginning of the year and see that this is so much more than just eloquent language. This is so much more than just beautiful imagery. This is a message for our hearts that can help us to understand that Jesus didn't just come to give us salvation. Jesus didn't just come to give us eternal life. That Jesus came to give us peace on this earth, that we don't have to live like hell on earth till we get to heaven, that we can have peace here, that we can have an eternal heart that is beating for God, that has calmness, that has presence, and in that, we're going to have a greater effect on the world around us instead of longing for the world that is our true home that we're not at yet. Amen? All right, let's pray. Jesus, thank you so much for this day and just for such a cool opportunity to be here this morning and to share. I just pray that as we close out today in worship, that you would just speak to our hearts, that you would just calm everything inside of each one of us, and that we would hear from you so clearly. That if we struggle to hear your voice, maybe today would be the day that we hear your voice simply by having peace inside of us and being able to hear things clearer. So whatever this means to each one of us in this room, I just pray that you would speak to our hearts, that you would give us something to take away, and that you would just bless the rest of this day together. Amen.